Hello, this is Omar Chancellor.
I am here with Karenina Marissa Dene at the Roanoke Diversity Center. It is February 18th, 2017, Saturday. Karenina Marissa Dene is a transsexual woman. Pronouns preferred, she, her. Now, Karenina, can I ask you, what does that sort of identity label mean to you?
I quite frankly think there's a difference between transsexuals and transvestites, which I think most people think see transvestites as drag, type of person. So I feel like as a transsexual that I want to make a transition from the male sex over to female, and I take some steps to get from one to the other.
Do you want to tell us a little about those steps?
I had to go see a psychotherapist for a session. The psychotherapist wrote me a letter stating that basically I wasn't crazy, I'm of sound mind, that he saw me as a person who needed to be on hormone treatment. And so he wrote me a letter so that I could go to a medical doctor to have the prescriptions prescribed. And so that's just one phase that a person can go through. There's also, of course, there's also sex reassignment surgery and, breast implants and that type of thing that a person can also choose. And this, of course, is the male to female transition. It would also be the female to male for those individuals.
Okay, thank you. Can we get into your childhood and, when you started sort of during your formative years, when you began to, think about identity, how you identify, and you started exploring things?
Sure. I started dressing in women's and girls' clothes when I was 10 years old, and I was pretty secretive for about a year until my mother walked in on me one day and saw me wearing some of her clothing. Her reaction was laughing at me, and she thought it was very funny and did some snickering and stuff, which hurt my feelings pretty much. Mostly I stole these clothing. Once I didn't like the way my mom's clothes fit, I figured that I could get some smaller clothing that fit. I started stealing. And my mom would go in my room, take whatever female clothing I had, and then I would just go and find a way to go steal some more, either from some store or somebody's house or whatever. And so that was the cycle I was going through for 3 or 4 years.
And this was in the 1970s? You were 10, 11?
Yes, late 70s.
Okay, late 70s. Can you tell us about, I know you grew up in Lynchburg.
Right.
Can you tell us about sort of the community there and how that affected the way you sort of sifted through your identity growing up?
Well, at the time, Lynchburg, we had the wonderful Jerry Falwell alive, and he was a very conservative pastor. He had also had a Baptist college back then, and he preached on a platform of more maturity and was not tolerant of anything outside of biblical, what they consider, you know, straight Bible. And so that made, if there were any LGBT people, a community in Lynchburg at that time, talking late 70s, early 80s, they were definitely in the closet or undercover. But I'm positive that there were some LGBT people back then. They just had to keep, you know, they just weren't in the open. They're not going to walk down the street and say, ah.
So there was no platform for organizing and informing it?
No.
Okay, so, and you told me this is the early 1980s. This is going on. Okay, now, did you have anyone to talk to? Did you have anyone to sort of, you know, sort through these feelings with? Express what you were feeling?
Absolutely not. And I wouldn't even, with the atmosphere of, like I said, because Jerry Falwell, you know, he didn't start out in the late 70s and early 80s. He'd been preaching for years up to this point. So the atmosphere was, you know, terrible. There would be no way that I would, you know, try to say to anybody that I was, you know, either gay or transsexual or anything for fear of being ridiculed or made fun of or perhaps even some type of violence. And along with that, the AIDS epidemic had just come out like early 80s too. And so that just, you know, even though I wasn't very educated about AIDS back then, it would not have been to my best interest to say in a conservative town, which was ultra conservative, that, you know, I'm transsexual. Because I think, you know, if somebody like Jerry Falwell heard that, he probably would have flipped his wig.
So, you know, did you have any spaces that you could feel safe or just any safe haven that you felt that you're most comfortable during this time?
No.
No? Okay. No.
I didn't know how to find them.
Right. Okay.
I didn't know how to, because I was a kid. I didn't know who, if there was anybody I could call up. I just didn't know.
And what about school? During this time, what about, you know, how was this affecting academic life, or how are you navigating school at this time?
I actually enjoyed school very much, because school was like a safe haven for me, away from my mother, and she's a, like a totally different subject. And I pretty much did good. The kids at school they weren't educated about LGBT issues either. So I don't know that they knew what to look for. So it wasn't really something that they could really point out. So we were just kids. And it's not like today you could go to a school and an elementary school kid could probably tell you some stuff about LGBT people. You know, and so.
And did it ever reach a boiling point? I mean, you're keeping all this bottled up, all these feelings, and, you know, just the exploration of your identity.
Yeah. Well, like I said, after you've gone through this cycle of stealing clothes and stuff and dealing with my mom from 11 to 14 years old, which is from 82, 83, maybe 84, I ended up assaulting someone, and so that was mainly, that was pretty much because, you know, all my feelings and emotions were not getting dealt with, and it just became a time to where it had to explode, it had to go somewhere, and so this person got assaulted, and I had to go deal with the criminal justice system.
Okay, and where did that take you? What, I mean, did they have you speak to someone, or did they charge you and just send you away?
I did actually get a charge, but the court wanted to do a psychological evaluation, and the psychologist first spoke to my mom. My mom revealed to them about my dressing in one girl's clothes, and in light of that, after the psychologist talked to me, his opinion was that I had some homosexual tendencies, that I had an overbearing mother, that I needed to have an LGBT support system, and things of that sort. And he wanted me to get counseling, you know, dealing with those particular issues.
Did you feel like a lot of the language that you use now to identify yourself or identify others in the LGBT community, do you feel as though the psychologist knew a lot of this and helped you sort through it, or were you still, you know, exploring that and figuring out, you know, what to call, how you see yourself, how you regard yourself and others? I mean, how...
I actually think I learned terminology and what's what just through dealing with other LGBT people. I think the psychologist helped maybe a little on a small scale in the very beginning, but I mean, deep down inside, I'm dressing in girls' clothes. I knew that I'm different and that there's somewhere in this other spectrum over here that I fit in better. And so I think I learned more by just being around others and learning from them.
And up until now, how did race also affect you? Because, I mean, you are Black and this is the South, so, I mean, was there...
Well, it's affected me very personally because typically, I've always been a transsexual who's been attracted to Caucasian men. And living in different parts of Virginia, not only have I lived in Lynchburg, but I went to a boys' home up in Winchester, Virginia, which is Frederick County, up next to West Virginia. And I mean, white men were attracted to me, and it was an issue. And so, and even being here in Roanoke, I'm somewhat reserved with that, just because I know that even though race relations have come a long, long way, there's still some issues, you know.
Well, you had mentioned that after the psychologist, you got into some more trouble and were sent to a boys' home?
Right.
Okay, tell us about your time there.
The boys' home, I think, was a blessing. Because I think there were two scenarios that could have happened. If I had never gotten in trouble again, I would have kept living with my mom. My mom was a devout Jehovah's Witness. They were not agreeing to let me be gay or transsexual or anything in that spectrum of LGBT. Nothing more than straight. And I think that would have been a catastrophe for me mentally, emotionally, and so the other part of it is that I did get in trouble again and was, I think, and was eventually moved to a boys' home, which allowed me to step out into and figure out what my sexuality was. Yes, I engaged in some unhealthy sex, but I think the good of that situation is that I was able to find myself and be myself and not be forced to be a sexuality that my mom wanted me to be or some religion wanted me to be or somebody else. I could be myself. And so the more that the longer I stayed at the boys' home, the more I felt good about myself. And I felt emotionally comfortable. And I felt myself getting stronger as a person.
So you feel that you got more out of it than you risked by having unhealthy sex then?
Yes.
Okay.
Even though, like I said, even though at the time, it was still a bit risk,
right?
Because of the AIDS epidemic at the time. But still a very, very big risk. I wouldn't recommend it.
And the racial makeup of the boys' home, how was that?
I would say 80-20. I would say 80% Caucasians and 20% some other ethnic group.
And at this time you knew you were attracted to white men?
Yeah.
Okay, so this was...
Utopia!
Right, so this is Winchester, Virginia, and how long were you at the boys' home?
I was there from 84 to 87, so 4 years.
And that's 4 years that you lived there, but you weren't a student there all 4 years. Am I correct?
Yes, I'm still a student there because I lived there.
Oh, right.
But as a, I was still doing their program there. I don't know how to explain that. I went to their school portion of the program. I was able to go to a regular public high school my junior year, my senior year. But that's just their schooling program that I was able to do public school. As far as their program for, you know, their overall program for students, they help them grow mentally, physically, and to help them with other life skill type issues. I was still at the school to learn those things. So I still did things with other students at the boys' home for the life skill type of things.
Okay, and did any of the sort of like the program directors know what was going on with the boys? That they were like, you know, that you were exploring, you know, how, you know, your sexuality and.
I don't. No staff member has ever said anything to me. Ever said anything to me about if I was doing any type of homosexual activity, but. I think they suspected that you know, things were going on because other students knew that I was doing things. They knew. And I think some of those students would go and tattle on me, but I never got caught. So I think in the students tattling or telling them and me never getting caught just made the staff members, you know, one, you know, I think they still felt like there was some things going on. Because I didn't, you know, even though I went to public high school, I didn't pursue, you know, women, like girlfriends. I just didn't pursue. It was like, you know, I just went through like girls, like, and never said nothing about having a girlfriend or nothing because I didn't have one. So I think, yeah, I think they knew, but just didn't say.
Well, as far as tattling goes, I mean, that brings up a question. Did you find that with all the boys or some of the boys that there was a, you know, a sort of culture of acceptance as far as race or sexuality goes?
Some there were. Yeah. Some there were. Some others, their reason for tattling me, telling may have been because they hated, you know, the act between two males. They hated that, or they hated the fact that, you know, two different races was doing something. So, or both. So, you know, which one is which, I wouldn't be able to say, but, you know, definitely possible. I definitely think that had something to do with
it. And what about the public high school you went to? Tell us about your experience there. What was the landscape like racially, or in terms of sexuality? And how far away was that from the boys' home? Could you please?
My junior year in high school was in Frederick County. It was James Woods High School. Frederick County is like northern Virginia, but it's off close to West Virginia, part of Virginia, and like Maryland and West Virginia and Virginia, where they kind of meet up. Anyway, it's kind of the makeup back in the 80s, or from the early 80s, was that racial tension, like West Virginia, and so Frederick County was primarily, you know, I would say it was primarily a type of county that was guys with shotguns in the back of pickup trucks. And that type of thing, you know, rebel flags. You might see some tattoos on people with skinhead on it, or swastikas or things like that. But that was the county part. So going to school in that county was difficult because, you know, when I went to school, I didn't see anybody of any other different race other than Caucasian throughout my whole day. And so it made me stand out, of course. And, you know, I complained. You know, my first week in school, I was literally in tears because I was like, you know, I'm not going to make this. I was like, and again, I'm attracted to white guys. So, but I'm like, I'm not going to make it through this. And then my senior year, I was just, the boys' home that I was at was able to get me transferred to the city school, which was Winchester. So my senior year, I went to John Hanley High School, which is where I was able to, you know, get my high school diploma. So the atmosphere, the racial it was much more racially diverse. Much, you know, in that school.
The less eye candy, right? Huh? The less eye candy, right?
Yeah.
And did that make junior year particularly hard? Because I know you are attracted to white men, and you know it is pretty. It was pretty conservative, and you know, it was a little racist, and
it made me have to go through an emotional roller coaster, because I wanted to be there, because I wanted to see what I saw, but I didn't want to be there, and so I was like. You know, I could get up in the morning. I like school, like I've said. I could get up in the morning excited about going to school and rush off to school. But as soon as I get there and go to a couple of classes, it'd be like, you know, why am I here? You know, why am I still putting up with this? But, you know, I don't want to say that the whole school was like that. It's just, you know, some bad apples, because by far the whole school wasn't exactly, you know, had a problem with me. It's just certain individuals, but they made it tough.
Did you have any particularly bad altercations or confrontations with other students, or?
They weren't, I don't know, I guess on a scale of 1 to 10, I would say they were maybe a 3, because I would get bumped around. I've gotten bumped around a few times. I've had some times when I've had guys say things to me. There were a few times when, I felt like I wasn't gonna make it home that day, because you get a couple of football-sized players that get mouthing out at you. That I don't know, but
do you feel like these altercations were mostly because you were black, or because you were trans, or because you were exhibiting sort of like, you know, a sexuality or identity that was just other than what they felt comfortable with? What do you think?
I would say that I think that it was mostly because of my skin color. But, however, I want to say that I don't think that I came off 100% masculine either. So I am sure that I was a person that had some, you know, feminine ways to me that people could see, especially the guys. I mean, especially, you know, I had some ways that you probably could see that I didn't realize that I was showing at the time. So, I would say mostly racial, but I think some femininity was in there too. And yeah.
Well, speaking of this, going all the way back to when you were growing up in Lynchburg, did you feel like you had to put on like a, you know, sort of a super masculine facade that, you know, to defend yourself or just keep you safe and secure?
I wouldn't say super masculine facade. You know, like, hey, what's up? You know, it wasn't like super masculine, but I think at the same time, I had to hide a lot of femininity. Or, yeah.
Well, what kind of?
If I'm sitting in a room, like I've done here today, and I could sit here and I could, you know, cross my legs and be, you know, do whatever with my wrist or whatever, And it's cool, but I wouldn't have did that back then. You know, I would be, you know, pretty much trying to stick to at least the minimum masculine protocol for that you would expect out of a guy. And it would be like the minimum, you know. Then like going into the boys' locker room, that's like a totally different thing. But I mean, it's the same thing. I have to, you know, look but don't look type of thing, and then try to act at least as best I can to be the minimum amount of masculinity that I could muster and not appear in any, you know, I don't want to appear in any way feminine because it's just going to not be good. At least that's my perception right there.
And, okay, so you finished up in Winchester City High School.
Right.
Right, okay. And you finished up well, good grades?
Yeah.
Okay, and you went on to college?
Yeah, I went to Farrell College here down in Farrell, Virginia, right down the road.
Okay, so why don't you tell us about your experiences there? I mean, did you explore your sexuality there as well, or... did you have any relationships or?
I did not explore my sexuality there because this was still, when I went to college, it was 87, and it was still, you know, this was considered Southwest Virginia, and it was still like, almost as equal as where I came from, pretty much. As far as what people said about this area, and after seeing like some of the same types of things, you know, rubber flags, people with also some different types of tattoos on them and things like that. This was an area that I felt like I didn't want to be flamboyant and didn't, you know, the last mistake that I felt like that a trans person could make is let a person know that I liked them and they were like super straight. You know, that just seems like it put my life in danger. Because if they're like super straight, then they go on as, you know, that motherfucker is gay. And that just, you know, when he goes and tells his friends, it just magnifies his whole thing. And here I am on a campus with people who, you know, I don't know what's coming, you know. I'm living in a dorm. Unfortunately, I had a room by myself. But, you know, I was still young. And there was just, because I went to college at 19, I graduated high school at 19, went to college. I was not going to try to, you know, bust anybody's bubble and take a chance on me getting assaulted or hurt. Anything like that.
So needless to say, there weren't any sort of LGBT groups on campus or in the area.
No way. No. Not back then. I'm sure it is now, though.
Yeah. Well, in that case, when were you fully sort of introduced to an LGBT community or other LGBT individuals? And did that come right after college, or?
I would say that my main interaction with the LGBT community, or my first real interaction with the LGBT community, was during a time when I was in prison. And, you know, they recognized me from the beginning and approached me, had some conversations with me, tried to teach me how to be safe, try to help me get, you know, a safe roommate, that type of thing, and how to deal with, you know, the prison life. So, but that interaction, because of all the places that I've been in Virginia, I never really ran into any other transsexuals. Not saying that they weren't there, just I never ran into them or never had conversations with anybody. So unfortunately, it's sad that it's sad that I went to prison and I had to learn from that experience about my community. But
do you have any particular instances or experiences that resonated with you from prison? I mean, good or bad?
I had one bad experience. I've been raped while I was in prison in 1994. It was three black men, and I would say I don't think that was my determining factor to be exclusively attracted to white males, because I actually think that every race has, you know, attractive men in them, and that's honest. But that was the only, you know, incident that was really negative that happened. I think it was mostly because I was naive. I pretty much didn't want to have, you know, I was attracted to guys in prison, and I didn't want to just get with anybody. And so by me saying no was very offensive to some of the guys in prison. So it happened. But I got through it.
Did you have any sexual encounters that you remember with fondness, even to this day, that really helped you sort through your feelings about any feelings that you still had that you weren't sure about?
I would say yeah. Yeah, I would say I've had a number of interactions that were very, very, very positive. And that's just because it wasn't just all about the sex. It was all about, you know, talking and helping each other out and being friends with each other and, you know, helping each other get through, you know, the situation of prison. So,
And did you have any relationships in prison?
Yeah, I would say one. One relationship that lasted 3 years, and that didn't happen until very later on, in the 2000s, but that was only one.
Were they black, white?
They were Caucasian.
Gotcha. Well, you know, when you left, when you went to college and heading into prison, this is the early 90s, you're just coming off of the AIDS epidemic. And so, I mean, I know you said that you didn't really think about it much, but looking back on it now, were there any ways that sort of any stigma regarding it kind of affected you in major ways?
Particularly in the 80s?
In the late 80s, coming to the 90s, when we're coming off of the epidemic.
I would say that even then, in the late 80s, it was hard in the community to it was hard for me to say, even though I knew I was trans, it was hard for me to put on the persona that I was trans. It was hard for me to put on the persona that I was trans, even though, just because I didn't have the support out there with me. And I didn't want, you know, the general feeling of the community was that AIDS is an LGBT issue. We started it, and doggone it, when, you know, to see a LGBT person, for some people, meant violence, because they had family members that died from this, so it meant, you know, a lot of animosity. So I wanted some support, basically. I wanted some people, you know, if I was going to be, you know, so that we could do the walk together and not, you know, have a trans person way up here by themselves and not say that they're trans and then get no support and then end up getting, you know, hurt or something.
Well, at this time, were there any celebrities or people in the media to look to? That you recall?
Well, I think Elton John was, I guess he was out back then. I don't remember very many, maybe Rock Hudson. He was an actor. He had a pianist named Liberace, who was very flamboyant. But in general, there wasn't, you know, you couldn't really touch them, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, you could be mad because they, you know, they were who they were, but I mean,
celebrity is celebrity.
Yeah, you can't knock them out on television or hurt them on television.
Okay. And, I mean, you spent post-college up until moving here last year mostly in prison.
Mostly in prison.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit about what you were charged with?
In 1994, may have been 92, I was charged with forgery, uttering, a couple of counts of forgery, a couple of counts of uttering, burglary, and I went to prison for that. And I was released in 1999. Then in 2000, I got credit card fraud, credit card forgery, and credit card theft. And went to prison that year for that.
And can you tell us about what motivated the behavior, those actions?
All of my crimes have been motivated from the desire to make some type of transformation from male to female, and to get, I needed money. And I wasn't going to get it from my mom. And so, you know, at the time, as distorted as my thinking was, I thought that the best way to do that was to go back where I normally did back when I was 11 years old, which was steal. So I stole checks, I wrote them, I tried to steal people's money through the checks. Same thing with credit cards. It all goes back to trying to steal something that doesn't belong to me in order to help with my transformation. So.
And I mean, during this time, were you corresponding with your mother, or was she in the picture at all? Were you guys communicating?
We were communicating. In fact, each time the incident happened that I went to prison, I was living with my mom, and that just made me, living with her just made me want to get some money even more so I could move out and go be myself. And so I think living with her and the communicating with her but not having the communication, the healthy communication, is what, you know, is why I was going toward that bad road.
And a lot of the tension that you had with her was motivated by her religious beliefs, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk about what your relationship with God is as a result of that? Or does that have anything to...
I am spiritual. Okay. And I have a lot of moments that are spiritual. I don't think what religion I choose is really based off of my mother, but just based off of a question that most people can't answer. And that is, and the same thing I asked my mother, is how do you know that your religion is the correct one? Because most of them have had some guy that says that he has heard something from God, and they have Jehovah's Witness got their own Bible, the Mormons got their own books and Bibles, and you know, which one is right? You know, which one is right? So nobody can answer that. So that's why I don't really get into religion, but I enjoy spirituality, and I enjoy being spiritual and having a spiritual experience.
Do you feel as though, I mean, there weren't a lot of celebrity trans individuals back when you were growing up, but I mean, these days, you know, things are a little more progressive.
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel as though, you know, Bruce Jenner, now Caitlyn Jenner, has positively impacted the progression of the LGBT community, or any others that you can?
I think yes and no. I think Caitlyn Jenner has been positive because he stood up. He was a popular person. He had beautiful daughters, and he got up and he said, "I'm transgender," and he went took some. He took some steps to show the world that he was transgender. The only thing that I think that he has not done is to be an advocate. And it's good to hear him have done what he did, but I would wish that he would be an advocate for people who still feel like that they cannot come out for various reasons, whether their mom's religion, or for kids that get kicked out of their house and have to live on the street because their mom kicked them out of the house because they're trans or because they're gay or something. You know, what can you do for advocacy? And I haven't heard Caitlin do that. Same thing with Laverne. Now, Laverne Cox may, I don't know, I think she's done some things on the advocacy level. But, you know, that's what I would like to see. Some of the superstars who have transitioned and have been successful to step out and say, you know, we need more people because they, I mean, I think they already know. They know the battle on the side of their mind, their brain, and feeling like they can't come out because they have a wife. You know, Caitlyn and Jenner, he was married. He had kids. I mean, the fear of coming out and saying, look, I'm really a female on the inside. I want to be a woman. I mean, they help kids in the younger generation get out of the fear of being themselves and not making the mistake of feeling like that you are, that, you know, the society demands that you marry someone of the opposite sex and have children and whatever and lie about your sexuality. You don't have to do that now. You can be yourself.
Things have absolutely become more progressive. You know, here we're now still in the South. Well, you did grow up in the South, Southern Virginia. Yes. Right. And tell us about your move to Roanoke last year. I mean, how has the community treated you since you've been here? How did you feel? How have you identified with it?
I did pretty good. And I think a lot has to do with my age and how long I've identified as trans and how comfortable I am with it. And, you know, not being scared of people, you know, just not being scared of hate. And I think the more, you know, the more you stand up to the bully backs off. Because he knows that, you know, the bully finds out that unless he's going to do something really crazy, I mean, so he backs down. I think just being older and knowing and the wisdom that I've gained over the years has helped a lot. The education, the things I've learned. And all of that has helped.
Well, I know you haven't been here all that long, but have you had any meaningful relationships, romantic ones?
No, not yet. Haven't really been lucky. I just figure if one comes. I figured if one comes my way, one will come, but I'm not really looking.
So, would you say that, you know, you've made the best out of Roanoke, and this is, you consider this your a proper home now?
Yeah. I won't say that I won't move somewhere else in the future, not in the near future, but in the future. But I would say that I'm comfortable with Roanoke at this time, and it's out of all the places that I've lived in Virginia, I'm feeling most comfortable in Roanoke, and I think it has a lot to do with how much the community has learned about LGBT people and have acceptance of being a big part of the society as a whole, I'm saying.
Well, on that, I mean, how's the Diversity Center? How's your relationship with the Diversity Center, and how does that impact your time here?
I visit the Diversity Center quite often. I use people here to come and vent, talk about things that are issues with me. And I do this, I try to do the same thing. I try to be a ear for somebody else who I know, a young person who, you know, may be struggling with something that I'm familiar with, that I've gone through myself. So I'm able to both help and get some help just by, just, I think sometimes support is about just being there, being available. And sometimes people have something that they want to talk about, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just need, you know, to be around somebody else that that's like them, just so they can be sure that they know that they know that they know that they know that they are who they are. And sometimes all it takes is just being in the same room. So that's what the Diversity Center does.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you. We've learned a lot, and we're glad to have spent this time with you. That concludes our oral history with Karenina Narissa Dene. Thank you.